It's Armageddon, Joe.
It is in women's sports. Check this out. That's deadly. That's just something going on there.
Testicular injuries in women's sports, 1900 through 2000.
And 2020. And a sharp rise. I mean, what's going on there? Is the safety rules, have they just given up on the safety rules or something? Or because women shouldn't be getting their balls injured in sports, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's almost unheard of, I would say, in history of sports. But suddenly, and the only thing I can think of is that it must have something to do with just being lax on the safety rules. Like, I mean, come on.
I know, it's health and safety regulations. Frankly, they're not strong enough.
Terrible.
They really need to up the game there.
So that's the only thing that really caught my attention over the past... Past 2 days,
3 weeks.
Three weeks.
We've done it. Not much going on, really.
Yeah.
Apart from Armageddon, but
Armageddon.
It's Armageddon for sure. Israel, Iran, hello.
Yeah.
Have you even been watching the news?
I missed that. I thought it was just
You'd miss it. Like, yeah.
Well, yeah, it was the 12-hour. Spectacular on social media, at least. But I didn't pay much attention because I thought, when I had a quick look at it, and I thought what was going on was actually that Iran was like delivering a bunch of model airplanes to Israel, and rather than shipping by boat or plane or something, they just decided to fly them there to show what they could do, kind of thing. They could travel that distance, and then Israel would go on to sell them to local Israelis. But then I realised, they shot them all down. It's like, so Israel's a bit of a hair trigger there. Like, Iran was just trying to, extend the hand of friendship and say, here's a gift of a few hundred model airplanes.
Amazon delivery by drone.
Yeah, thing, yeah. And they shot them down. It's a bit excitable, yeah. That was my...
You're mocking them, but the Shahid drones, they featured big time in Ukraine.
Yeah.
These are the Iranian... What do the Russians call them? Codename Geranium?
Geranium or Lawnmower.
Lawnmower. Because of the sound they make.
Or moped. Yeah, mopeds.
Why is it they make such a loud racket? They're propellered.
Yeah. It's an engine.
So like there's a motor in them.
Yeah. It's like a moped, basically. And with a propeller on the back.
So you might... One might laugh at that, but then one actually finds that they're
useful.
They're useful because they bypass heat-seeking air defense systems.
Well, they're more difficult.
What about radar? Radar see it?
Yeah, I mean,
If they can move erratically as well, can they be? Piloted or programmed?
They can move about as erratically as you can.
That's pretty erratic, then.
Yeah. they're not the most. Not the fanciest piece of. Military, air force, whatever equipment, very slow moving, probably at top speeds, maybe 200 kilometers an hour.
Funny you say air force, it is Iran's air force, basically.
Yeah, okay. Technically, yeah, or space force if they have one, I don't know. Anyway, they're not, they've been used in Ukraine to good effect on the battlefield for two reasons. Well, one is in areas where Ukraine doesn't have any air defense, and also for kind of swarms of them where the air defense, any air defense that is there can't get them all. They run into missiles to try and take them down, and then the rest hit their targets. But I think as useful, if maybe not even more useful than that, is that they're sent as a first wave in advance of other faster, more accurate, etc. missiles in order to identify for the Russians to get an ID on Ukrainian air defense and then target those, because basically the drones go in, Ukraine has to assume that they're loaded and they're going to hit something, so they can't just let them fly by, so they take them down, and then once they set off their air defense, then Russia gets a bead on where that air defense is and then sends faster, fancier missiles to take out the air defense, because that's what they want to do. They want to take out the air defense because that's a main problem for Russian aviation primarily, and all throughout the past couple of years has been the fact that Ukraine has had a decent enough air defense and has not Russians couldn't have, what do they call it, air dominance. What is that term?
Air superiority.
Yeah, or something. Exactly. Something like that, whatever. But they, you know, they couldn't use their air force as much as they would like to at certain times, you know. So that's what those drones are for, to have to take out the air defense.
Is that a likely role for these same drones yesterday? Decoys?
No. Well, decoys. I think last night they were more like decoys in a certain sense. But it's even more cynical than that in a certain sense. I think the point of those drones was to, well, obviously the propaganda effect, you know, swarms, you know, hundreds of drones heading towards Israel. And but the main thing I think was I would say that pretty much all of those drones had no warhead on them, had no explosives in them, and because
why?
Well, just because maybe I don't think Iran would get much of a read. Maybe they already know, but I don't think it would be primarily to try and identify Israeli air defense because they can do that anyway.
Yeah, small place.
Yeah, Israel isn't moving stuff around.
There isn't a big war movement going on.
It's different there. So the main thing would be to make them spend a lot of missiles uselessly. And I think if you watch the videos of the Israel's various different.
Someone estimated $1 billion per by Israel, so to speak, last night.
Come straight out of American taxpayers'
pockets.
Americans
pocket, so spent a billion.
Yeah, shooting down a bunch of remote controlled
lawnmowers,
which
cost $300 a pop.
Yeah, and so that was just for the effect and to make them waste that money, and also, but the main point of. Last night, or the previously decided, decided on response to the embassy attack in Damascus 2 weeks ago. This was decided to take out. They're going to target a military installation. They're not going to target. You know, there would be a red line. It would be a serious. It would be an actual escalation if Iran were to attack. You know, civilian areas or like the center of Tel Aviv or the Israeli government or even
that's confirmed now is all military.
Yeah,
sites.
Two air bases, just based more or less two military bases in the south of the country.
In the south,
yeah.
That's interesting because near Gaza ish. There's video of stuff falling. We can look at one of them. They're speaking Arabic hurriedly, and there's a big area in front of them that's dark.
Mm.
My guess was it was shot from Gaza.
Maybe
you could have seen it.
Could have been. But again, even those strikes that you see, you're never going to get any proof of what damage was done. Of course, the Israelis say there very little damage done. We shot down 99.99% or whatever of everything that they fired. And the Iranians, their part, saying we struck a serious blow, serious damage to their air bases. The Zionist regime is quaking in its boots. And of course, on both sides there, you see that's primarily for public and international opinion. That's to appease the Iranian population, to make them feel like we avenged our martyrs in the embassy. And people want it, you know.
It's been 2 weeks now that happened.
Yes, 2 weeks
that
ago.
That was the casus belli.
Yeah, it had to respond. You know?
Here's your tweet for a summary. This is we're cutting straight at the chase. I think you posted it last night.
Yeah, it was about midnight last night.
A few dozen slow drones, like you said, likely without warheads, sent to distract AD in the hope of hitting, that's one of the air bases, the south, with ballistic missiles.
Mm-hmm.
Did that actually happen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The ballistic missiles part.
Mm-hmm.
It worked, although ballistics low yield appear to be. And this is what you're talking about here. Biden, quote, and this is a headline actually, Biden convinces Netanyahu not to attack Iran. Okay.
That's not a headline. I wrote that.
Oh, you wrote that, but
there's headlines up this
something.
Morning.
Okay, right.
No, I was doing it.
You put it in quotes.
Yeah.
Ah, you put it in your air quotes, so to speak. This is what they're going to say, and it is indeed what exactly they've said. Israel declares they did that.
Yeah.
90+% They did a Ukraine on it. Oh, mm-hmm. We shot down 120% of everything. Mm-hmm. I've seen some headlines as well. Amazing display of Israel's. The air defense.
Safe,
oh my goodness.
Safe beneath the watchful eyes.
Yeah. And that's the quick wrap summary. Iran declares victory. Israel declares victory. U.S. declares diplomatic victory. And people everywhere have lots of fun and fear and loathing. Talking about, picking up their take on it, I suppose, their perspective of it. And the big war, i.e. an actual fucking Armageddon scenario, is postponed for now again. Yeah, so that obviously was not Armageddon.
Yeah, and below you can see the video of that one you were talking about.
Yeah, so subs in Arabic, they're speaking Arabic, so I'm thinking it's from Gaza. They're coming in fast.
Yeah, they're ballistic missiles. Probably. And you notice, it's quite far away, but there's not, you don't see a plume there. You see a flash, but not much of a... obviously there weren't nothing, but, you know, and I think, and that could have been...
There's no big fireball.
Maybe not Gaza, that could be like, yeah, exactly. That could be, that could be Bedouins out in the desert, basically.
Exactly, well, right. It needn't be from Gaza. And that's something going up, AD. Yeah, I was... just for comparison, right? So, put this up. You've seen Joe's take there. This is Scott Ritter's.
Hmm.
It's close, but it's off. I think he makes the bold claim that they use hypersonic.
Hmm.
But that's not hypersonic. Hypersonic, you barely see. You'd have to freeze the frame to see anything coming in.
Hmm.
So he's just like, eye for an eye, okay? Iran struck Nevatim airbase. That's the second, the other one. With at least, so he's picking it up, at least 7 of his new hypersonic missiles. Did Iran declare that?
No.
No, they didn't. So he's, you know, you're putting in stuff you wish were true. Nevatim, now this may be accurate. Nevatim's home to the F-35 American, pretend Israeli fighters that attacked the Iranian consulate in Damascus 2 weeks ago. So that would make sense in a proportional response, okay?
Yeah.
Not a single Iranian missile was intercepted.
Yeah.
So that's like 100% the other take.
Yeah.
From Israel.
I mean, it's possible that, I don't know, that you're never going to hear about it, but hypersonic missiles were used, but just not in that video we showed, which I think was Ramon Arabis. It could have been Nevatim, because obviously that was, you know, fog of war, that was last night. But those missiles, like you said, coming in are not hypersonic. You know?
Yeah.
They're moving fast, but they're not hypersonic.
Yeah.
Not, you know, 10,000
there may be an acceleration at the end, but you can still track it and watch it.
Right, but that's the
hypersonic is so fast, you've got to freeze the frame and maybe see
right, that's just the kinetic, you know, or not kinetic, but gravitational force, let's say, because ballistic missiles are just lob them up, and then for a large part it's gravity that's...
Do they get a boost? Is there a mechanical boost on the way
down?
Yeah,
I mean, they have to get up, I suppose, yeah, but, you know, once you get them...
mostly gravity.
Yeah, well, gravity's helping, obviously, but... But they have a max speed and all that kind of stuff, you know, ballistic missiles. Because they're basically rocket fuel.
There are things you can big up for Iran, but he's gone too far, Ritter. This is the furthest they've launched anything. So it wasn't even, I'm sure the Pentagon and the Israelis knew, but it was only theoretically, I think it's just a couple of years ago, Western reporting on Iran's capabilities would have poo-pooed Iran as bluffing that they could even reach that far with a ballistic missile.
Mm.
Tonight, last night, proved that's not true. So they are within range, and it's accurate, I think. If they hit the base, what on the base?
Whatever. Yeah.
Because remember, previous to this, it was January 2020, Iran hit the U.S. Al-Assad airbase in northern Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And until then, it wasn't known that Iran had the capability to do that. Well, they could.
Mm.
And now they can actually go further.
So. Yeah.
But so that is, you know, you can big them up, but not like big them up. you can't go too far with it.
You know, I mean, the thing behind this that people don't understand is like, and I see it so much on Twitter, and there's so many people. I mean, last night when I was looking around and like I was looking at most of the different Twitter accounts and also Telegram accounts talking about it, and they all seem to not, the vast majority of them seem to not understand. I can count on one hand the number of people actually seem to understand the kind of, the reality behind the hype and the propaganda.
Yeah.
In fact, most people didn't actually realize that what they were getting was a lot of hype and propaganda. They didn't understand the reality, the real politic going on. You know, this was an agreed upon. It's very possible that it was actually officially
talked through,
communicated
explicitly
to the West and therefore Israel, to America and therefore Israel by Iran, that this was what they were going to do. Roughly speaking, this was well known in advance. You know. And that was seen as, okay, that's proportional. Despite the fact, you know, and that's despite the fact that Israel then today responds, well, we're going to respond in some way to this blah, blah, blah.
I saw the details that they said diplomatically. Mm. They're going to encourage a coalition of people who will sign up for new sanctions.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So sanctions.
So even Israel, the tell is in what they say after.
Yeah.
They're not going mad dog on Iran.
Yeah.
They're acting within something like a rational.
Yeah, the Israeli
foreign... Which suggests that's previously been thought through.
Yeah. The Israeli foreign minister said, we need to classify the Iranian Revolutionary Guard as a terrorist organization and impose effective sanctions against Iran.
There you go.
It's like...
That's our response.
Iran sanctions. Where have I heard that before? Has that not been going on for 20 years or something?
40 years. The most sanctioned country on earth.
So, anyway, the point is like that a lot of people didn't seem to understand what they were seeing, which was that they're seeing a lot of hype, a lot of pre-planned event communicated to all the involved parties, and that the response was, the damage was basically known in advance and what was going to happen, and then their response was... Israel's response was known in advance as well, that it would say these things, but that it would be there'd be no escalation. This is like, you get to slap me, now it's your turn. I get to slap you, now it's your turn to slap me. And we do it for show, for the whole world to see, and America gets a lot of sympathy from all the useful idiots who think, Israel gets a lot of sympathy from all the useful idiots, especially in the US and Europe. It'll open the coffers of Congress and the American taxpayers' coffers for Israel, which is always good. It's definitely worth it in that respect. It gets the Israeli population to understand that, to believe, hopefully they want them to believe that, Iran is a deadly threat, and they need their government, they need Netanyahu, who's under serious political pressure right now, to go. And he's seen as, look, you need me, you need a strong man in this crisis. It's like, ramp it up. Whenever people start threatening the political class, it's like, ramp up the fear factor, ramp up the threat to their lives. So it's perfect for Israel in that respect. And Iran needed to respond to the embassy attack, right? For national pride and for the population to feel like they had a competent government who was able to defend itself, right? It's not just going to take their embassy being missile and seven Iranians being killed in Syria and just walk away.
Yeah.
Especially by Israel. Do that, right?
I know. That's beyond the pale, by the way. That's happened since we last did a show.
Yeah.
I mean, no embassies ever been... Well, that's not true. The US accidentally...
Quote, unquote...
hit the Chinese embassy in Serbia in 1999.
Belgrade,
but other than that, you don't do that. It is considered beyond the pale.
Yeah.
Like among the elites.
But Israel allows
to do to each other.
Yeah, but Israel allows itself those excesses because Iran is beyond the pale.
Syria of course,
is beyond the pale. Assad must go. The Lebanon, the Hezbollah are terrorists.
General so and so was in the embassy at the time. They applied probably their anti Hamas doctrine. Well, he was in the house. Yeah. All his grandkids were there, but he was there. Yeah. So
yeah, that was their daddy's home doctrine.
Yeah, where's daddy?
Where's
it's
daddy?
Literally the name of their AI.
Yeah.
Sick.
So
one of the analysis maybe you can bounce off.
To phrase that, Israel, I just want to say Israel's chosen, the Jews are the chosen people, and Israel is the chosen nation.
Mm-hmm.
Rules that apply to others don't apply to them, right? Especially in this context.
Mm.
That's what they see. Anyway, go ahead.
Chosen people.
Well,
one other thing you can bounce off. I think this is someone else who's more accurate. Arnaud Bertrand, the French expat living in China,
mm-hmm.
On the geopolitics of it, it now looks pretty much certain the US will leave it at that. In a rather funny statement, Biden says, Israel demonstrated a remarkable capacity to defend against and defeat even unprecedented attacks, bullshit, sending a clear message to its foes that they cannot effectively threaten the security of Israel. You see, America and Israel wins. He also said they will coordinate a united diplomatic response, meaning no military response.
Mm-hmm.
Translation, let's say that Iran's attack on Israel is a win for Israel, so we can stop the escalation. The background is that it seems that Israel did not notify the US ahead of their bombing of Iran's consulate, maybe.
Probably.
This is the thing. A bombing that was likely a desperate attempt to provoke retaliation by Iran. But why would you do that if all you want in return is why provoke Iran? Okay, hang on, I'm thinking this through.
It's
provoke Iran just to do a little counter provocation back.
I definitely thought that
that's
myself.
Good for Netanyahu.
Mm-hmm. Whenever I thought that when that thought crossed my mind that they had done that deliberately, not for any strategic reasons, whatever, it was very important to hit the embassy, but rather that they knew that it would be would be something that Iran would be forced to respond to, and then they get to
Israel gets some sympathy,
shoot down all the missiles, make the people more afraid of Iran, and basically keep the Israeli population confined and corralled mentally and psychologically and emotionally, and keep Netanyahu in power. As a strong man in a crisis, right? You need a crisis.
Yeah.
Anytime
he's got protests outside his house at the moment.
If a lot of people want your head and want you out of power, not like a good crisis. Like,
as he would say himself, this is good for Israel. Well, yeah. I mean, not good for Israel. Yeah. It's good for me.
Yeah, yeah.
After 9/11, right?
So, yeah, it's possible that was the case, but whatever, this is all very much scripted. And that's not to say, like, when I say it's scripted or choreographed, I'm not saying that they're all in it together. People go, oh, you mean they're all in it together? Well,
yeah,
to that extent, yes, but you have to understand that the alternative here that people would like you to go to, like, if it's not all choreographed, then it's just completely open. And we're talking about just wild, you know, unrestrained responses from one country against another. You can't have that in Israel, vis-a-vis Israel and Iran and the US and the context in the Middle East. You can't have, and they've known that for a very long time. You cannot have, people last night all thought that this was the beginning of some major conflict in the Middle East, but it's not, because you only get to do that once.
Mm-hmm.
Iran only gets to actually use all its super-duper fast, whatever, if it has any, missiles against Israel in an attempt to defeat Israel or destroy Israel. Is that even possible for Iran, to destroy Israel completely? Have they thought about that? Probably.
We don't know.
But they only get to do it once.
Yeah.
And then it's over. I mean, and you either make sure you win, or you're dead, because the Israelis will not probably hesitate to use nukes.
You need to know where Israel's nukes are. Yeah. And there's good reason to believe that many of them are stationed on submarines
gifted
to Israel by Germany over the last decade.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the seas,
of course,
all over the world.
Yeah. So that's the context in which this has happened, is playing out, and that's been the state of affairs for quite a long time in the Middle East in relation to these countries, and obviously with American Europeans involved as well. And so it's been a long time for them to figure out, to settle into a mode of operating where it's like, you slap me, I slap you, you slap me, I slap you. And it's all, it eventually becomes choreographed, you know, by necessity, because neither of them want, there's enough deterrence on both sides, a lot of deterrence on Israel's side, enough on Iran's side against Israel to make Israel agree that we got to choreograph this. Like, I mean, even in Ukraine, deconfliction, even before Ukraine, in Syria with the US and Russia, and also in Ukraine, they're talking all the time about how to avoid an escalation. So they're saying, listen, let's just have, we're having a war, an ongoing kind of low intensity, you could say, war. Some of it's proxy, some of it's not, and we're just going to string that out because it's good for our economies, it's good for our arms industries, which is good for economies, it's good for politicians who have friends in the arms industry, that kind of thing. We want to keep this game going, you know what I mean?
Well, I don't think
the idea of where we all just like strangle each other and all fall dead on the ground is not really a good idea.
I don't think the Iranian leadership is so cynical about it.
Well, they have to play the game, certainly. Though.
They have to, because there's the existential. It's similar to being under the MAD, mutually assured destruction, nuclear umbrella.
Yeah, but at that point you have to bring it all down and just accept the reality on the ground type thing. And how are you? But then how are you going to have a war? Because in theory, MAD would mean peace, right? Look, we both recognize war's a bad idea. Let's have no conflict whatsoever. And obviously we're not going to have, everybody said we're not going to have any nuclear war because everybody's dead. So what's the point in having any kind of war? Because there's a theory of escalation towards, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. So in theory, MAD would mean peace for everybody. That was the idea behind, in theory, that's what people touted, the idea of more people get nukes, the more peace you have in the world, because nobody wants to fight. But then they have to agree to some extent, not maybe officially or whatever, but they have to understand the rules again, that we're going to have some kind of a conflict. We're going to shout at each other, we're going to rabble rouse, we're going to call each other terrorists, and all sorts of names. We're going to call Putin an assassin. We're going to use all that rhetoric, but it's all...
Well, we're going to use dirty tricks.
Yeah, as well.
So the other side has to do something.
Well, dirty
tricks. Respond.
Well, yeah.
So in Iran's case, it's been subject to... Its scientists been assassinated the last 2 decades
mm-hmm.
with agents either controlled by or actual Israeli agents all the time during mm-hmm. that sinking of Iranian oil ships.
Mm-hmm.
Going back 20 years, the Stuxnet virus.
Yeah.
So Iran has to learn to adapt in tandem and develop yeah. capacity in tandem.
Yeah.
So Israel and the Western powers, MI5, MI6 rather, and CIA develop ISIS and Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
Iran has to have counter proxies.
Mm-hmm.
So it has the PMC, PMUs
yeah.
in Iraq and Hezbollah, of course, in Lebanon.
And you have color revolutions and fomenting, you know, that kind of anti-government sentiment within countries. So there's all sorts of dirty tricks and attempts to take you down by other means type thing. But then everybody becomes aware of that. Eventually, when you've played all those out, everybody's aware of the tactics that the other uses. And it's very difficult for anybody to actually achieve anything with those tactics because everybody else is aware of them.
Yeah.
And it's just pointless. It becomes nonsense. And the only thing, the only saving grace for it, in a certain sense, if you want to call it that, is that it makes money. The bottom line is there's a motivation to keep it going, even though it's pointless, in order to make money.
It keeps the right people in power and rich. Because people tend to split, you know, it's either one or the other.
Yeah.
If you say that, they'll go, okay, they're all in it together.
No, that's what I said earlier on.
Smoky rooms, you scratch my back. No, they don't, they're not like, it's not like Iran, it's not like you get Israeli reps and Iranian reps and they meet in Switzerland at the WEF and they're all in the same club.
Okay,
there really are people in each country that wants to wipe the other one off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
But when it comes to it, where the rubber hits the road, they can't. They're structurally constrained.
Mm-hmm.
They still want to. And we might, you know, incrementally get to a point where there really is something off the leash.
Yeah.
To the point where there isn't a rational response or provocation in Israel. And it really is an Armageddon type.
Mm.
All or nothing. But like you said, for Iran and or anyone else to do that, they'd have to do it right because you'd only get one shot at it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
where are those nukes?
Yeah,
you hit them first.
Well, we have it as a working hypothesis that Soleimani, the killing of Soleimani, the missile strike against Soleimani a few years ago there, it was right before COVID, right? 2020.
Yeah, it was weird, right in the evening.
That was agreed to in one way or another, or understood and known and allowed to happen by the Iranian, the Ayatollah and his people, because they did.
That was literally your theory. I think one person else on earth backs you up, Philip Giraldi, because he read your article.
Really?
I don't think anyone else even thought of it, because it is kind of one step too far.
Well, but you just said that, you made me think of it, because you just said that yeah. you don't want people, there are certain people in Iran or Israel or in other countries, all the countries right. who don't have a rational response to this, who want to wipe it out and are mad dogs.
Soleimani was.
I think Soleimani, not that he was a mad dog in that sense, but that he was willing. He had that attitude. Let's say, okay, he was a kind of a mad dog in that sense. That he thought took this seriously.
By fire with fire all the way.
Let's wipe them out. We'll do whatever we can to wipe them out. Whatever he was planning, he had probably all sorts of plans for Iraq militias and all that kind of stuff in Syria and Lebanon to really get it going and push Israel to the brink, that Israel would have maybe taken some nuclear action. And I think, and he was so popular in Iran that it was a problem for the Ayatollah and the people in government there, that this guy was almost like, he could have formed a parallel power structure. And he would have had the support of a lot of people in the country to do that, because obviously the people in the country as well would think along the same lines, let's destroy the Zionist regime, wipe them off faces, wipe them from the page of history, etc. So,
and he probably came into conflict.
And yeah, how do you get rid of him? How do you deal with that internally? Well, it's much easier if someone else does it for you, and then you can keep, the state can keep him as a martyr, the people don't blame you for it, because, you know, there's all sorts of situations inside countries, as you know, as we all know, where certain competitors are taken out. Competitors to the domestic power structure start to rise up and gain popularity in there, and they're taken out by, like, look at Imran Khan. They tried to kill him in Pakistan, right? He's an example. For different reasons, obviously, but so this happens all the time. So I wouldn't be, you know, I think it's reasonable to assume that in the context that Soleimani was someone who was seen as a threat by the Iranian government and the Ayatollah, and they didn't know what to do about him. And if it came up that
so
it suited
Trump's offer.
Trump and or Israel to take him out as a propaganda victory, they went, actually, we were thinking the same thing.
Yeah. But people are so fixated on two sides in an existential clash, they'd never do that. No. That would never happen. Trump cooperating with the...
That's the real politic that they keep quiet all the time. That's why they don't talk much about that kind of stuff. And that's why people in politics think that they're so much smarter and so much wiser and more capable than the average person in the street. Because they look at the average person in the street, they realize they would never be able to understand that. But that's the reality people in politics live. That's how it actually works inside politics. That it's none of it's personal, really. Everybody's in it for themselves. Yeah. And if you can make a deal with your archenemy, it's fine, because you know what? They're not really my archenemy. I talk about them as my archenemy, and the media talks about them as the axis of evil, or et cetera, et cetera. Or Putin's an assassin. But,
I can tell you what the other faction in Iran is. Broadly speaking, it's you got Soleimani, whose attitude was kind of, well, if it comes down to Armageddon, it comes down to Armageddon.
So a bit, we'll all be martyrs.
But then in Iran, you've got more moderate, mm-hmm. more secular mm-hmm. in thought, people mm-hmm. who are watching multipolarity, Chinese money coming in,
changing
investment
world.
In infrastructure that's off, taking off in Iran,
yeah, if that's
totally bypassing the US dollar system. Right. And they're like,
if that's going to happen,
can we keep building it? Why wreck a third or half of it in a massive conflagration with Israel?
There's going to be a big party soon where we're going to win by non-conventional means, and there's going to be a shift from Western power to Eastern power, and Iran's part of that. And do we really want to suicide the whole country right before that happens?
Yeah.
We're positioned to play a significant part in this new multipolar world, and our state is going to raise, we're going to be a bigger player in the world and all that kind of stuff. Do we want to die at the hands of those Zionist pigs right before that happens? That's crazy. That's unhinged. That's way too emotional, way too personal. Probably Soleimani took it, and he didn't see that bigger picture, didn't care. He's a general. He's just like, look, I figured out a way we can destroy our archenemy, basically, you know what I mean? For good, and we're going to do it, you know? But so people don't think about that ever, it seems, about how... It's just a matter of thinking about it for a little while, you know what I mean? Think about practically how these things would happen, rather than just having a blink and an emotional knee-jerk reaction. I mean, and don't listen to the media, you know? I mean, the media's all over, like Telegraph, UK Telegraph and all that kind of stuff. What was one there? Some dude. I don't know. I don't even know if these people are real. Richard Kemp, he's all over Ukraine, and there's a bunch of them in the UK Telegraph. The world stands on the brink of all-out war. It's like, no, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
It's not at all. And that's kind of deliberate hysterical nonsense we have come to expect
from
the mainstream media over the past, especially in Ukraine. We've seen it over the decades, really. And it just bores me. And those people, whether he believes it or not, I don't know. If he does, he's an idiot. If he doesn't, he's a conscious manipulator and liar and distorter of public opinion.
He was military and probably contractor now of some sort. So he has an investment in the money coming in for weapon sales. In complete contrast to the world on the brink of war, we've already covered it, but this is the official Iranian statement. On last night's activity, punishment of Israel completed. Dawn, Iran's top military commander has promised a more extensive response in case of future attacks. And to scroll down, first paragraph, sorry. Iran has no intention of continuing its military operation against Israel. Dawn, okay. And then, I want you to scroll down now to the statement from the Ayatollah. No, by the general speaking on his behalf. The supreme leader said that this punishment should be carried out, and thank God this operation was carried out with the efforts of the Revolutionary Guards and the help of other armed forces. We see this operation as a complete result. And this operation has ended.
In our opinion.
We have no intention of continuing the operation. Of course, the threat is the next one will be much more extensive. So there you go. Dawn.
Yeah.
Okay.
I posted this yesterday, afternoon, so a good 12 hours before. Because I don't even know, there wasn't talk about it yesterday necessarily, they'd been talking about it over and over. But I posted this yesterday.
Oh, it's been incessant for 2 weeks.
So Israel going to attack Iran going to attack Israel anytime now. Isn't that a loop for you, no?
Oh, it's like a gif. Normally it just loops.
Yeah,
loops,
it should loops. Loop, yeah. Loop for me. Anyway. It's not playing now.
And it's always getting closer and closer and closer.
Yeah, closer, but you never get to see it, you know. What I don't know is what I think that's like. So none of what we're saying should be taken by people to mean that we don't think there will be some major conflict or major destruction, and that maybe Israel will go down the tubes in one way or another. But what I really can't anticipate, or you know, I could throw out some ideas, obviously, but how, say, the scenario where Israel might be destroyed in one way or another, and what destroyed means is open to interpretation. Mm. But if Israel were to be, in one way or another, wiped from the pages of history, how that would actually happen? Don't know. I don't think it would be as a result of Iranian missiles alone. I really don't know. It could be a natural catastrophe or something like that, or who knows.
But its fate is so tied to the West. Its civilian government budget year to year depends on the West.
Mm.
They have, like Ukraine, it's really a kind of a artificial entity. So it's.
And they have it locked down, you know what I'm saying? The whole situation. They have, like, Israel is extremely important. Even Robert RFK Jr. has said that, you know, Israel is essential to America. And, I mean, it has been for a very long time. It was largely created with that in mind. So for 70, 80 years, it's been a linchpin of American, you know, dominance in the world. So over the years, they have made sure to insulate and inoculate or safeguard Israel against all potential threats. So they've created a situation where there really isn't any way that Israel can be destroyed militarily, unless America wants it to be that way.
Mm.
And I don't think that's likely to happen in at any point, really, unless there's radical changes. But so I don't know how Israel would be destroyed. And I don't know. I just at this point, I don't think it can happen militarily. And that's not, obviously, people don't like to hear that, you know, because, you know, Israel has a lot to pay for in a lot of people's eyes, and in reality. But, you know, you have to give up this idea of there being justice served in the way that you would like it to be served. It may be served in some other way that maybe isn't quite as satisfactory to you, but it may happen in other ways. And in the meantime, we just have to suffer the bullshit.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to notice how it all happens. The real politics behind the scenes, you know.
For me, the giveaway was like last week, I think. Some anonymous State Department head was saying, so any day now we're expecting the Iranian response, at which point Israel will move into Rafah.
Mm.
I mentioned being so confident that, okay, here comes Iran's hits. Okay, cool, Iran, off we go. it betrayed how contrived it was. Anyway, but has there been any movement on that? Is that...
Well, said today, Netanyahu said today that they would be pushing ahead now with full force in with their Gaza plan. This is just a blip. This is just a temporary interruption for the lulls, for propaganda.
What are these really serious? I mean, what was 30 or 40,000 people dead now, which leaves still the bulk of 2 million.
Mm.
2 million people are crammed into Rafah in the south of Gaza, right?
They've moved out of Khan Yunis, which is kind of more south central, next, you know, north of Rafah, and the Israelis have moved out of there. So a lot of Palestinians who are all crammed into Rafah have gone back to Khan Yunis. Not there's much,
okay,
much there, but they've moved out, and the Israelis have done that deliberately in order to give a safe haven or a safe space, quote unquote, for in advance of them moving into Rafah to get the rest of Hamas, quote unquote.
Oh, right. Okay. And so there are still about 2 million people alive.
Yeah.
And they get some aid, so some, they're not... Are they starving? I mean, they are, but... They're not dying in droves yet from starvation.
No, not in droves.
There's enough aid
coming
in.
Yeah, and there is, just, you know, barely enough, but enough, you know. They're all probably quite malnourished in that sense, or a lot of them are. But, there was that event, I think, since the last time we were here as well, where Israel killed, four or five aid workers for... I can't remember the name of the aid agency.
The World Chef's Kitchen or something?
Yeah. And they, yeah. That, I mean, they got a lot of, to the extent that Israel can be bad condemned press. Or get bad press, they got it from that. Western governments give lip service to, you know, bad Israel, smack on the wrist, don't do that. But these were three of them were British.
Hmm.
And at least, I think all of them, maybe military, former military personnel, one or two of them, former SAS. So these are like British heroes, right?
Mm.
Who are over, you know, taking an alternative track in life, handing out aid to people in a conflict zone, and Israel killed them.
And they were on the move, too. Yeah. They said, well, sorry, it was an accident. But there were three vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
One of them came back to help the other one. It was hit then.
Yeah.
And then one fled, and they hit it still.
They hit it three times, yeah. Deliberately, so they wanted to kill them, basically. I mean, and their excuse was, well, we thought that we saw a guy with a gun in the place that you came from, and we figured he might be in one of the cars. So
since then, also, this happened. This is the extra. Not that this will get as much sympathy, because somehow Hamas is a terrorist organization, apparently.
Yeah.
Three sons of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh killed an Israeli airstrike in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
Scroll down. It's more than that. Three sons, but also grandchildren. Four, Hamas said four of his grandchildren were also killed. He's in Qatar still. He was touring a hospital. You can maybe play the video at the top when his aide here tells him.
الله يسهل عليهم الله يسهل عليهم يعني إن شاء الله ربنا يسهل يلا لا ليش لا كمل ربنا يسهل إن شاء الله ربنا يرزق إن شاء الله بالذات الله.
The subs were too small to see, but he's told, and he just says, God rest their souls. And his aide asks, well, do you want to stop this tour? They're touring a hospital, which has Palestinian civilians that are airlifted out. And he says, no, let's continue.
Mm.
He's either like, now in the Western portrayal, well, he's a terrorist leader, so he's got no conscience, so he's not affected by it. Or he's a man of steel, and he's heard this before so many times, including his own family. They're just so inured to it that they really do have to believe that, okay, it was so-and-so's time.
Hmm.
You've seen examples of that from just ordinary civilians in Gaza. You know, it's the day after. Like, it's one surviving five-year-old girl and 30 people were dead. And she still is like, well, they've gone to God.
Hmm.
F Israel. You know, that. Yeah, that's the only way they can cope, developing that kind of iron conscience about it, iron attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It's unimaginable. There is nothing like it. People compare it with Nazi Germany, but it's still different, obviously, in scale. You know, the Israelis don't have anywhere near the same.
Mm-hmm.
The Nazis were all over Europe, but this is a much smaller place, but it's so intense because it's small and so packed with people. And there's no escape.
Mm-hmm.
And double tap bombs, first one, then another.
Mm-hmm.
Then hit the ambulance. Then roll the tank over the people in the ambulance. And you can't run away from it. You have to watch it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Day after day.
Yeah. So it's just back to normal. Everybody can, yeah.
Back to
Ukraine. Or Ukraine's happy, you know. They don't like distractions from money for Ukraine. They don't like anybody else getting more important wars than they have. Their war is the most important war there ever was. So, yeah, back to that. Back to the usual, I suppose. Don't expect there to be anything in the near future. I mean, as in the next few days, week, 2 weeks, whatever. Everybody can go back and do important things, like whatever it is that you find important. Getting on with your life and, you know, smelling.
Blaming Putin for all your problems.
Yeah, if you want to. But there's more important things than that.
Since we did last show, death toll in Moscow went up to 144.
Hmm.
11 suspects arrested. I think it might be 12. There was a manhunt, like, a few days ago for a 12th guy in Moscow. So far, all of them Tajiks or something like that from Central Asia.
Mm.
But the main development in the investigation is a bit interesting for the West. Russia has more than once suggested that the U.S. Well, what they did was they sent formal requests to the judiciaries in the United States, Germany, France, and Ukraine, asking their questions. They answer their questions about funding, people, banking. Also Cyprus. They're demanding questions of Cyprus, and Cyprus is like, what? There's nothing to do with us. So what? You know, they didn't really say anything. But there was a more specific development. I think about 10 days ago, the Russians put out, this isn't normally done, but in this case they did it. They published a readout of a phone call between Shoigu and his counterpart, the Minister for Defense in France. Usually, you know, it's maybe a summary of it's published, but they actually printed the whole thing, and the French were not happy about that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Downstream from that, maybe just 24 hours or 2 days later, this happened. I'm not saying it means anything, but it doesn't look good. Macron slams Moscow's claims of French role in terror attack.
Mm-hmm.
Macron dismissed claims that Paris may have been involved, speaking to French media. And this is the phone call I referred to. In a phone call Wednesday last week, Shoigu suggested that Kiev's Western backers, including Paris, may have been behind the attacks. Yeah, that's not good. It's always a bad luck when you have to. Because remember, this is Macron we're talking about. Not 1 week before this, he had to issue a public denial that his wife is, in fact, a man. So, not a good luck. There's been some other development, but I think it's mostly taking place kind of behind the scenes to do with... These countries are all signed up to all kinds of treaties. And there's a couple on terrorism that the Russians have cited. And you are supposed to, if they have questions about certain entities, organizations, and their financing, and it's connected with suspicions of a role in terrorism, you're supposed to comply. We don't know if that is happening or not. They're probably dragging their feet. Well, if they are dragging their feet, holy shit, that speaks of like, because what usually happens is, sure, full compliance, of course, we're all in the war together against ISIS. No one's we got nothing to hide. But if there is foot dragging going on, it'll only, I think what the Russians are doing with these statements and lists of formal questions to foreign judiciaries is that they're trying to see, what's the word when you dangle something out there and see what who protests too loudly, who flees, you know. They're trying to see what comes up, what's smoked out, who gets nervous or something like that, you know.
Well, there's, I mean, on that Krokus attack, that those four guys that killed those people in Moscow, I mean, there's been development in that in the Russian media, but of course it isn't carried at all, really. The Western media has just ignored it. This is on Russian TV. So they published interviews, so there's a whole thing there. You can play a bit of it there. It's got subs, you don't need the audio. But the basic details of it are that the four individuals who carried out that mass murder in Moscow stated that they, in these interviews that they're watching right now with the subs, is that they were instructed to go to Kiev afterwards. So they themselves were asked these questions, and they're asked on camera, and they're instructed to go to Kiev afterwards, where their contact would help them and give them 1 million rubles.
Right. We're just watching one of them say that now.
Yeah. We tried to get to Kiev, blah, blah, blah. So what's... What's strange, we'll put the link in the show, but in the show notes, but what's strange about it is that immediately after it happened, somebody on some Telegram channel claiming to be ISIS or on some other dodgy site that I could create if I wanted to.
Yeah.
That's the origin of the claim. I am ISIS. I did the terror attack. I sent those guys to Moscow. ISIS did this. Please tell everyone ISIS did this. It's ridiculous as evidence that, especially in the context of these guys, supposedly, if they're working for ISIS, or if they are ISIS, they would have, first of all, they would have suicided themselves in some way or other. But if not, they should have said something about ISIS in these interviews. But there's not one word of them, any of them, stating that they're affiliated with ISIS. They would, if you're an actual ISIS member, you're very proud of it, and you're going to death to the infidels. I do this all over again, and my other brothers will do this to the rest of you evil dogs.
Has there even been a single Allahu Akbar in the last month?
Not a word. So the idea that it's an ISIS attack is very tenuous, because people understand ISIS attack as being of that nature that I just described, but these guys are very different. They themselves are saying they're basically mercenaries, that someone paid them, had paid them some money, was promising to pay them more money to kill these people. They're basically guns for hire. And that they themselves have said they were going to Kiev to meet someone who's going to give them the rest of the money. That's not ISIS. But the Western media immediately just went, oh, ISIS claimed it was them on Telegram. Let's move on.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, talk about reporting and talk about telling people what's actually... But, I mean, you know, the Western media is massively biased, like...
To the extent that those Russian TV reports, with the more extensive interviews of those guys, got any airtime in the West, they poo-pooed it and said, you know, with good justification, hang on a second. We all saw what happened to them when they were caught. And now they're brought back out on TV, so those confessions, just dubious. They were tortured, right? But you've got that. On the other hand, you've got Telegram channel says so. That's it, because that's the confession for ISIS. It's a fucking telegram. Anyone could have done that.
Right, so there's circumstantial evidence, the fact they were caught on the road, on the main highway south. They were halfway between Moscow and Kiev and Ukraine.
The Russians have another claim, I think it's in that report actually, that they saw that the mines
had been cleared
on the other side of the border.
Safe passage. Through and that's what they say in the interviews as well, that they were told that they would have safe passage through to Ukraine, someone there would help them and give them money. So the way the Western media just completely ignores all of that is evidence of guilt, in a certain sense, or evidence of them knowing that there may be something to this, and they're not surprised. And that's why they want to cover it up. If this was a shock to them, well, they might still want to cover it up, but you'd expect a bit more circumspection about the reporting of it. But the way they immediately just said ISIS did it, that's it, move on, Russia's talking nonsense, and ignore all of the evidence, including from the actual perps, it's just ridiculous, you know. And it fits with
what's happened.
it threatens to expose a reality that they don't want to be exposed, which is that mercenaries and ISIS type and jihadi types have been used for decades by Western governments to do their dirty work, to wage proxy war against their enemies. It's as simple as that, and they're terrified of anybody knowing that.
And for domestic fear purposes.
Yeah, exactly.
There's past form as well. A car bomb went off in Moscow, ostensibly targeting Alexander Dugin, instead killing his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And the person of interest that the Russians probably proved was her, was an SBU agent who made it back into Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Or did she go via Estonia? She escaped anyway, and that's it. She's in a safe house somewhere. Mm-hmm. She was unlike an ISIS type for hire, she was a legit agent, caught on camera, did the deed.
Yep.
And she used terroristic means to assassinate someone.
But it was only one person, right? Supposedly it's different if 140 people are killed. Then it can only be mental jihadis. And you absolutely have to cover that up, because that's going too far, right? That shows a rabid, violent, psychopathic nature. And that can only be ascribed to ISIS and radical Islam and crazy jihadis. That we would never do that. Okay, we might place a bomb.
No state would ever do that.
No state would ever sanction that, when in fact they do. I mean, it's massive naivety and willful ignorance and or deliberate obfuscation and lying about the reality that is clearly evident with just a little bit of scratching. It's right there and it makes sense and it's real politics, like we were talking about earlier on. It's the other aspect of real politics, how these things work, like we're talking about dirty tricks and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's all there. It's all available. It's in mainstream papers, you know what I mean? You can talk about, like we got some message, or we got informed, or you found it somewhere, that some French website that has a list of conspiracy websites, and we were on it, and they did a little write-up on SOT.net.
Yeah.
And one of them was saying that they were quoting some things. I think they quoted something I said about the Marat situation back in the
2012.
And they said that...
Toulouse terror attack.
Yeah, and it was the way they quoted something, I don't even know if it's in what I wrote, but anyway, they quoted something that amounted to me saying that, you know, these kind of terror attacks are often kind of faked or staged in some way by Western governments. And they went, crazy person, ridiculous. That's evidence of how crazy I am. And then you can just go to the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Boston Globe, a bunch of other Western media outlets that have long articles, you know, now several years ago and more, but over those years, in the last 10, 15 years, with titles like FBI terror plot and a subheading saying how the FBI created terrorists in America and caught them and, you know, set them up and trained them and gave them weapons and set them up only to catch them at the last minute. So that's fine for a Western broadsheet to say that the FBI actually takes some gullible person, tells him he wants to be Al-Qaeda, convinces, you know, pretending to be Al-Qaeda themselves, some FBI agent or whatever, pretending to be Al-Qaeda, gets some low IQ guy, suggests he wants to join Al-Qaeda, it'll be awesome, I will give you some money, do you want to go and blow up a building in America? Sure, you know, we're all behind you in this, you're going to do it. Give him some weapons, give him some boots, give him some stuff, and then lead him and give him a fake bomb and let him go down to the building and place the bomb, and only then, when he pushes the button, the FBI agents jump out and say, gotcha, which is a massive setup, right? And they've done that literally dozens of times. And that's in Western media broadsheets. And the only difference between that and what I'm saying is that in certain occasions, instead of a fake bomb, they give him a real one. Oh no, they would never do that. And then it's like suddenly you're just, the difference is that how naive are you about Western governments?
Mm-hmm.
How much of a fantasy land do you live in terms of how you relate or how you think about your government and what they would and wouldn't do and how much they care about you? That's the only dividing line, is that my government loves me so much, me as a member of the population. So in America, my government loves all 320 million of us so much, right? The members of the CIA, that they would never countenance a situation they would never think of a situation where it might be in their interest, their social engineering, their domestic issues, whatever, to allow a bomb to go off and kill civilians. in the interest of their agenda. You just say, that's where you draw the line. So there's not a lot of difference between the stuff that we say and, you know, what's reported in the mainstream media. There's just that fine line of how cynical are you, maybe, or how naive you are, and how much you believe your government would or wouldn't do something like that.
What's even worse is that not for the Crocus terror attack, but for other ones in Russia, there's plenty, you're free rein in the West to speculate that the Russian state...
Oh, they would do it, of course.
...let the bomb in on purpose.
So kind of
in fact, that's the prevailing counter theory. It's acceptable on Wikipedia and in BBC documentaries that 20 years ago, to rubber stamp his rise to power as president, Putin personally gave the okay for apartment the FSB buildings. To participate in the apartment bombings. That's fine. That's kosher.
Yeah, that's normal.
Because it's the Russian state. They would be that devious. Our states, though, roses just come out of their mouths when, every time they speak. You know?
Right. Despite all of the evidence to the contrary.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about evidence in history books, in factual textbooks, in university libraries, all sitting there on the shelves.
NATO stay behind Gladio terror attacks, Bologna train bombing.
So, they're delusional. Anyway, that's the only conclusion. These people are delusional. These Romans are crazy.
Ukraine war, more drone waves targeting Russia, more targeted strikes knocking out Ukrainian power plants. It's a bit more serious now. Some of the airstrikes recently have been, like, entire plants gone in Kiev and Kharkiv.
Well, Russia's built up to a situation where they're going to have some kind of a best, most awesomest offensive ever.
Yeah, that's the rumour. A Russian offensive targeting Kharkiv this summer.
Because the time is right. Because where all that money, where all those American dollars gone? We need more. Give us, those American dollars aren't coming out of Congress for Ukraine. They're stalling on it. That, what is it? 30 billion, 60 billion, whatever. A lot of billions. Ain't manifesting. And they're running low on ammunition. Maybe Europeans, Americans are running low on ammunition as well. And it's getting to the point where it's, you know, upwards in some days of a 10-1 ratio, where Ukraine has one artillery shell to fire against Russia's 10. So there's a lot of attrition going on there, it seems. And the Russians have seemed to have, at this point anyway, decided that that's the way it's going to be. It's going to stay that way. So the end is nigh, the end is near. And it's time for, well, not necessarily the end, but it's time for, the opportunity is there to make significant gains that they couldn't make beforehand, because Ukraine won't be able to put up as much resistance as they have done up until now.
I don't know.
Because of the lack of months.
I don't know. There's more fight in Ukraine left. This is from RT, but it's also reported in the British Times. Ukrainian women should prepare for conscription.
Well,
Kiev has been struggling to mobilize enough men to set up the front line. The Ukrainian government should leave its, quote, old-school mentality behind and implement true equality in its armed forces. Jesus. Kiev's chief military advisor for gender issues has argued. Oh, my God.
So that's where it's come. Like, usually when you think of a minister for gender issues, it's about protecting, women's rights, but particularly transgender rights and all that kind of stuff. But now it's like send the women and the transgenders to the front line.
Surely
you're meant to protect them instead of... Isn't that about creating safe spaces for them rather than bunkers?
Well, you know, that's been like the funny counter meme online about, well, you want equality. Okay, well, how much do you want? Do you want to go to war, right? In Ukraine, they're like, yes. Duh. So scroll down, she says, our constitution states that it's the duty of every Ukrainian to protect their homeland. So it was only right that women serve too.
When you find yourself in a position...
And she said that in an interview with the British Times, which didn't even blink at the suggestion. Revolting. We know there's teenagers. The Russians are pulling up IDs of 14-year-olds.
Do you know, like, historically, it never got to that, really, in any major conflicts in the 20th century, let's say, World War II, World War I, World War II.
Well, at the very end of World War, when it was Hitler's bunkers days, kids were out. But yeah, like that was for about 100 days.
Yeah, but not mobilised officially as part of government policies and law, no, laws passed in the RADA, which reduced the mobilisation age down and then including women in it.
They were Volkssturm. They were recognised to be civilian militia.
Right.
They weren't in the actual army.
You weren't giving them a helmet and putting them in a bunker and using them as camouflage. When you get to that point, historically, you don't get to that point. That's evidence that's the time when you surrender.
Yeah.
Before you start pushing your women into the front lines. But these nut jobs in Ukraine are made of stronger stuff, huh? Just shows the caliber of those people, right? They'll sacrifice them. Maybe they'll throw some, maybe start throwing some children into.
It's the character, it's Ukrainian character, Joe. It's different.
You got it.
I found something curious. It's not curious to us. Joe's been predicting this for 2 years, but here we go. They're starting to plant the seeds. They went from Russia will never win, it's impossible, because they suck and we're awesome, to, this looks not good. Maybe it'll be a draw. To, hang on. So here's the headline first. This was in Bild, which is German tabloidy paper, but it's a fairly serious article. This is a translation of the headline. This is what they're preparing. This is what NATO level propaganda is seeding into Germany these days. Explosive NATO plan. Is Ukraine threatened with division like Germany in 1945? And what they're alluding to there is post-World War II, Germany was partitioned basically in four, and each of the Allies managed a quadrant. French sector, British sector, German, and Soviet. So you see where they're going with this. They're looking ahead to the solution for Ukraine, and we're going to be in at least half of it, managing half.
Who? NATO?
NATO.
Well, maybe it'll be a Polish sector.
A French sector.
The way Macron's speaking. An American sector and a Russian sector. You've got a template for it. Just use the template, right?
That's how these people think. The delusion, surely, is that, in my mind, that's like, hang on a second. No. In World War II, everyone fought and died. The Russians far more than everyone else. But okay, everyone fought and died. Here, no. The Russians do all the fighting and dying. And then you guys get to take half the country? I don't think so. There's no way Russia's going to allow this. But this is where they're trying to edge it to.
Mm-hmm.
A reasonable partition of the country along the Korea model, right?
That's the American way.
Now check out this map. This is map... in the same article, in the Bild last week. This is what they had as how they see things going. Now, it's in German, but you get the gist. You've got the portion of Donetsk and Luhansk that Russia controlled at the beginning, Crimea, the south, the portion that Russia currently occupies. And then if you look in the key, the yellowy golden part is, I presume that means areas of Ukraine, Russia will probably control by the end, ND 2024, and then the orange, ND 2026. So it's such a bizarre juxtaposition of the headlines versus occasionally a realistic, approaching reality-based article, and this is one that's approaching reality, of the Russians advancing up to the Dnieper River.
Yep.
And that they think that we, like,
not all the way
the next,
to Kiev, though.
It will take another 2.5 years to get to that point, maybe. I mean, at the current rate, yes, certainly. So it shows that there's a... And that's what they think. So in 2 years' time, they think Russia will have taken that much, right? Ergo, all the rest to the west of there...
will be ours.
Odessa on, and Kiev, north, and then west. That's why Macron's talking about sending in the Foreign Legion and French paratroopers and landing in Ukraine. It's not that he's mad to send them in to take the Russian army on directly, but as an occupation force in the part we are entitled to. This is the thing they feel entitled. We've sunk so many billions into Ukraine. Hang on a second, Russia. We're getting some of this pie, at least half of it. But that's it's more reality-based thinking, but it shows you that behind all the bullshit, these people, this is how they calculate. Now, the hubris in it is, like I said, that they think they can do that after having a hands-off proxy war. Okay, it costs you booty, it costs you treasure. But it didn't cost you you keep boasting about how it didn't cost you any lives. It did actually cost you a few, but officially, no. And you're just going to walk in?
Whew. That's what America did after Second World War, at least, you know. After
well, at least War they Second did War. Join, you know,
a bit.
The European the theater.
Yeah. Ah, but you don't need, fourth generation war? It's all different. It's all about proxies. Proxy everything. That way you don't have to get the public involved, you know, when body bags are coming home. Did you see, this is just more recent, this was, when was this? April 10th. So it's reporting 4 days ago, but it was a couple of days later. I don't know, if, just go down to the video. So this guy's saying a meteor crashed. It was, I don't know if people check these websites out. There's one called Windy, one called Ventusky. There's others. They're basically weather map, weather websites that have map the globe, and you've got all the different parameters, wind, rain, snow, wave height, humidity, everything. You can check and click through them all and see what's going on in real time around the world. So somebody noticed something on the 10th, which is 4 days ago, on one of these websites.
Got to be careful with that noticing.
Yeah, noticing things. Play it there. I don't know if there's any audio, is there?
I have one with some audio work.
Oh, it's just got some
music.
Some music. So it's just after a few seconds. Look off the coast of Africa there? Yeah. You can just go back a little bit and you see it just appears. So it just appeared on this... website, someone was watching at a certain point in time on the 10th of April, 4 days ago.
Super dark red thing.
So that he has it on waves, set on waves. And so that shows wave height. And it goes from, you know, blue, whatever, up to like light blue, gray, light blue, all the way through yellow, orange, and up to purple. And the highest is dark purple. And it's 14 meters. And that's as high as it goes. So,
whoa.
There's a big chunk there, and these are buoy or buoy readings that are measuring wave heights.
Crazy.
And it showed this giant spot, like I said, off the southwest coast of Africa. something like the size of South Africa, almost, but, you know, it depends. I mean,
apparently it's distorted because of the Mercator function of a map. Someone calculated, and it's roughly the size of Texas,
right,
in real terms.
Right. So it's still pretty big.
Yeah.
So, if you just pause it there on the dot. So, anyway, so it appeared and then disappeared. And this guy thought, meteorite strike or something to cause such a massive rise in sea level. And wave height, basically, up to 80 feet. But then, on the website, I think that was what you're looking at there in terms of that map, was actually Ventusky. Their Twitter account posted this, posted a close-up of it.
That is Ventusky, yeah.
Yeah. Despite numerous reports of UFOs or Atlanteans launching from the ocean, yesterday's image of giant waves near Africa was due to a model error. Fortunately, our provider, the German Meteorological Institute, has already resolved it, and the forecast is fine.
Everything's fine.
So that shows it a little bit, going a bit further and propagating. So they actually had, when it showed up on the map, you could jump forward, you know, to see the forecast for the next X number of hours, and it was moving north, you know. The waves were diminishing, but it was like as if there was a tsunami going to, you know, swamp half of Africa. So they blew it off, basically.
For the record, there were no tsunamis. No one saw big waves.
No. So the thing about it is, though, that it's possible that what that was and the reading you're getting there was a outgassing. There's actually fracture points in the seabed floor in that general area that are quite like kind of weak or something or whatever, that are known as potential kind of... you know, fracture points for undersea seabed earthquakes, basically, you know, historically or you know, seismically. But it's possible because the things that read those temperatures, that they read different, the buoys that read the wave heights and stuff, they have accelerometers to measure the buoy movement as the waves. That's one way to do it. Doppler radar on the waves themselves, radar altimeters to show height, meteorological sensors, i.e. wind speed, air pressure, temperature, humidity, that kind of thing. They also have water pressure sensors of the hydrostatic column to check the sea level. and also water pressure sensors measuring passing waves themselves, and GPS receivers too. So they have a lot of them have an array of different sensors. So that those kind of boys could have been spooked, or not spooked, but spoofed to give this reading. If you had, like, you remember Nord Stream?
Uh-huh.
And the big plume, and that was quite small. This might have been significantly larger, of an outgassing event, with basically the bubbling up of the water, and but more specifically the actual, I'm assuming it might have been methane or a mix of other gases, rising up, that would have been read, particularly by that water pressure sensor of the hydrostatic column, to give this false reading of wave height.
Right.
When in fact it was more like, well, you have the combination of the actual the plume coming up and disturbing the surface of the water to, you know, a significant height, but not like 80 feet or 14 meters. But then the actual gas billowing up, confusing the sensor and forcing it or causing it to give a reading that then was seen as an anomaly, you know.
But do you, are you suggesting that, okay, the gas can give false readings? Mm.
The sensor.
But it's still, it is still emerging over such a large area. And is it actually bubbling so hard that the sea height is changing, or is the gas,
the sea height would be changing the same way with a lot of, I mean, there'll be no propagation or movement of the actual body of water, like in a tidal wave, you know, there's no crustal shift or anything like that would push water in a direction. It's just simply coming up, releasing a load of gas from the ocean floor.
But it's not bubbling like a giant cauldron.
Well, it would be bubbling like a cauldron, but not, I don't think, necessarily.
Like Nord Stream times 1,000.
Yeah.
Something like that, because people have that picture in their head.
So maybe, I don't think the sea, it would have pushed the sea up 80 meters that high, but...
80 feet.
Sorry, 80 feet, whatever. 14 meters, I don't think so, but it could have been the actual gas that confused it. But certainly it would have disturbed it. If you look at the videos of Nord Stream, I mean, there's, I don't know exactly what the height of the waves are, but it's certainly...
Bubbling
up, and there's a significant height to the actual outgassing, the release of the gas. So
they're going with model error. Yeah, I'm watching.
Well, the thing about the size of there as well is that's a model as well of, you know, if a buoy in a particular area, which they can be quite big, but it's going to measure something happening around it, but it's not necessarily going to measure that far away. It's going to model if this is happening here. If I've got a 14 meter wave here, it's going to go in this direction.
Mm.
You know, so, but it's confused because it's getting wrong data. Mm-hmm. It's getting data from, let's say, gas and outgassing. So it's reading, and then it's trying to interpret that as, if this is a wave, what's it going to do? And then it models it as, well, it's going to spread, you know what I mean? So it might spread it out much wider than it actually is, because those are all about models. I mean, they're forecast maps, basically, right? Because you can jump ahead and go, what's going to be like in a few hours? Where's that wave going to go? Or where's that cloud going to go? Or where's that rain band going to go? And you jump forward. So it's all modeling, you know? So they would put that for, and in that video there, I think the expansion of it there was, it started off quite big, but then it expanded as you jump forward, because it says, well, this wave is going to...
We predict.
We have a 14-meter tsunami, it's going northwards, here's where it's going, and it's going to spread, and it's going to stay at this height for this amount of time, because that's how long, you know, predicting, modelling type thing, this is how, you know, eventually the waves would reduce a little bit, but they're going to stay high for a certain period of time,
interesting,
and they're going northwards.
That means their statement is correct, but not for the reasons they're saying.
Right.
They're saying the model was wrong and our forecast is fine. Right. There's no waves coming.
Mm-hmm.
But the model didn't account for outgassing.
Yeah, because that's...
Because they don't even conceive of that.
It's not factored into it.
They don't. There's a guy in the comments, Johnny L., what about all the pollution caused by war and global climate change, global warming / climate change? He's talking about in the context of all this war talk in Ukraine, mm-hmm. and the Middle East and expanding. Well, yeah, this is the thing, Johnny. You have to... To make it all fit, you have to compartmentalize it in your mind. Now, that's a different topic. You're not supposed to think about the two in tandem, because then, of course, wars would be the first thing that has to go, especially the Pentagon's military budget, which is like the biggest gas hog on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a quarter of all Earth's CO2 output comes from the Pentagon system. But here, in this situation, they're telling you, something wrong with the model. The forecast is fine. But it's even worse than that. The model didn't account for something that can produce vastly more quantities of CO2 or methane emissions, vastly worsening the already complex system that's they've tied with climate change, right? The weather's getting more extreme because mm-hmm. the atmosphere is warming because there's more gas coming to the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not from humans, it's coming from the oceans.
Mm-hmm.
And check the vast majority of it's coming from the oceans.
And on that point, check this out. This is another comment someone looked at it then, because you can play around with these things. You can go back, I don't know how long you can go back, you can go back several weeks. This guy said, claims that the same thing happened 6 weeks ago. So he put the date at February 2024 and in the same roughly more or less the same location. He claims that for a period of, I see him scrolling along the bottom there, for a period of 5 or 6 hours. But that's the model again putting it forward. So suggests, if that's true, that there was another outgassing 6 weeks ago.
In the same area.
In the same area. So this you've got a fracture point. But that's the way the second model and the 4 days ago went as well.
Okay.
They let it go up, it went northwards. But that's just forecast. But it registers the data. The data is transferred, is inputted into the website, and then the modelling takes place, right?
Yeah.
That's not...
it's not showing
this
you...
part isn't real-time
yes.
data necessarily from the buoys every hour or whatever, you know what I mean? It's just once they see something coming, then they put... once they see a depression or something, you know, they'll model it and you can jump forward several days. They don't... obviously, they're not reading it 7 days in advance. But it suggests that there's a pretty serious fracture point.
Somewhere down
on the bottom there's of the South Atlantic.
I don't know if it's related because it's possibly, you know, peas and carrots, but the South Atlantic atmospheric anomaly
mm-hmm.
in the atmosphere maybe is tied with how the crust is down there as well.
Mm-hmm.
The two go together. Not always, but that's super interesting. So that right there, that's your climate change, people. When an actual serious global warming event takes place, they go, oh, sorry, it's just an error. Everything's fine.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's the thing you want to pay attention to. Not, you know, how your car is doing and how much emissions you're making and how many more taxes you can pay to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Nuts. Nuts. When the real stuff happens, they just go, meh.
There's one thing, Corey, we will wrap it up soon, but there's one thing that I missed. I mean, we talked about it, I think, on the last show or whatever, but there's one thing I missed, and I just came across it for some reason, I don't know, yesterday. But this is a couple of weeks old, I suppose. I looked at it at the time, and it's basically the Royals, your favourite topic, Neil. The British Royals.
Wonderful.
And where is Kate? So it's all done and dusted, right?
Kate appeared, she's fine.
There was all the question about she supposedly had added the picture of her and the four kids. You saw a bunch of different artifacts in it that showed that it was digitally altered or whatever. So the media put a kill notice on it, removed this picture.
Her Mother's Day photo. Yeah.
Her Mother's Day photo. And then after that, then there was a scene of a video of some guy, member of the public supposedly, William and Kate, quote unquote, were spotted at a farmer's market near where their house is. There she is. This guy said, yeah, I saw her and I took a picture. According to the media, I don't know if they give a name to him or whatever, but I don't know if anybody's ever looked him up or found out who he is. But anyway, he had the video, he gave it to the media produced it, but then everybody said, well, look, hang on a minute. And
they zoomed in, that's not her.
It's a very, kind of lookalike, but much younger. Definitely not Kate. But first, just quick glance, you might think it was her, but you look at it, no. And that compounded then the first one where the Mother's Day photo had been edited. And then there were a few others, supposed sightings of Kate. So a big mess was made of it by whoever's releasing these photos, and I think it's all choreographed, as it usually is with the British royal family. All public appearances are very carefully choreographed. So they made a big mess about it. So that brought more and more questions, more and more doubt. And then in this video that we have here, finally Kate supposedly put it to rest. Look, here's what happened, and here's what's going on. More importantly, I have cancer. I'm dealing with this. I'm starting chemotherapy, so I'm going to be out of the public eye, obviously, etc. Because obviously, the implication is she might lose her hair. You know, you don't want to bald.
Well, the first lady in Syria kept going public with
the
bald head.
I know, but the British are very sensitive things. Anyway, I want you to go back to the video and. I only came across this, and I realised people had been questioning this. If you go to the video, the first thing, if you just jump forward to like 1:15, She just gives it only a few minutes, but somewhere like that. And let's maybe just go back a little bit or something. Okay, pause. So, I'm not sure if this is an issue or not, but for the first thing, like, people have said the bars to her left as we're looking at it, or to her right, left as we're looking at it on the bench, are wider. Now, is that perspective than the ones on the right? Is that perspective? They're thicker. Three bars.
They are closer to us.
On her right. They're closer to us. Is it too much? Don't know. The other thing is that slight blur in the background, if you watch the whole video, pretty much nothing moves for the 3 minutes or 2 minutes, whatever she talks. Not a thing moves. It's absolutely static. But the thing that caught my eye was if you just... can you make it full screen? No, you can't. Can you go full screen? No. Okay, just pause there.
Okay, that's bigger.
That's a bit better. What time are you at? Don't know.
1:25.
Okay, go back to 1:17. So, and just, can you put it at, can you slow it down on the, do it like half. And I want you to watch her hand. See her left hand, the one with the ring on it. She can play it there. Keep a watch on her hand. Maybe it's too hard to see here.
It's not see there. That?
You see it popping in and out? You see the ring appearing and disappearing?
It's her.
It appears and disappears. Or it seems to appear and disappear. You can watch it again.
There. Fourth finger, not there. There. Not there. Or is it a perspective shift because her hand also turns up upwards?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, it seems to me that this appears or a bit too much in a certain sense for it to be... Like, if you look at... I just screenshot it and post it on Twitter just for the lols, whatever. But, you know, people have already talked about this and... Of course, there's people who poo-pooed it and say, no, that's the blur and you miss it and all that kind of stuff. But if you just look at these two pictures that I screenshotted from this video, just a couple of seconds apart, click on the left one. And so there's the ring, right, on the ring finger. And then go to the... And this is a couple of seconds later, she's lifting her hand. It just seems to have disappeared a little bit too much for me, you know. And I'll put that down as an AI artifact. And she herself, the hair, it's all very perfect. The background, everything. There's something about it that says to me that if I had to make a bet on it, I would go with it being AI. On top of all the other things that have come before this, that this is too neat, too pat, and the fact that there are some anomalies in this as well. And everything in the 3 or 4 or 5 different either photos or videos that have come out since it started, there have been anomalies, arguable anomalies in all of them, which really shouldn't be there. You can say it's kind of contagion. Once people see the first one, then they think, oh, they're scrutinizing
they
the next
seeing
one.
It everywhere, yeah.
Seeing it everywhere. But I think on the evidence that I would say, and in context, like I said...
Well, you've said before that...
With her health issue and all that kind of stuff, and it being covered up to some extent, and nobody saying anything about it, and wondering what's going on, that kind of stuff.
You've said before, though... In their defense, they're private. They're like, there is something going on, but look, just leave us alone.
Hmm.
But this is what I was wondering. It's the thing that's going on. It's it's not so much bad news for them as it is for the government.
Hmm.
Well, is she not able to show her face in public because there's some visible effect?
I think that would be the meaning.
I'm thinking... Paralysis.
Well, there's the Pfizer. What are they called? The Pfizer wink.
However, that happened. Palsy. That tended to happen to people immediately after, and most of them recovered from it.
Yeah, but
this has been 2 years. But people since have been stopping.
But people are still getting. No, it's not 2 years since she got a shot. She got a shot last November.
Oh no way!
Of course,
boosters and shit.
Yeah.
Oh God.
They have to keep doing it for public, and it's forced on them in a certain sense. They're representatives of the British people. They're meant to encourage the British people to do what the government says is the best thing for the British people. So you go to the royals and have them do an on-video, "Hi, it's vaccine season. COVID is still around. I'm getting my shot. Look at me. Here I am getting my smelly COVID shot." So they've all had multiple vaccines. And
are up to date.
And are up to date. So the more you get of those things, the more chances are, I mean,
crazy.
You know, so yeah, and people aren't talking about it anymore as much, you know what I mean? People are still getting it, but is there a bit of a lockdown on talking about it, vaccine injuries, and people getting things like Bell's palsy or different neurological, a lot of women got neurological issues as a result of the vaccine, women in particular, obviously the myocarditis and all that kind of stuff. You know, with all the wars going on, all that kind of stuff, is it no longer a hot topic and something they're not willing to talk about, you know? I don't want to talk about it. There's no public appetite for it anymore, but it's still going on, you know? And, yeah, I mean, even, I'd say, I don't want to be too dramatic, but in some cases it can be a ticking time bomb, that even if you didn't get multiple boosters or redos after the first couple, or the first four that you got in the first year or something like that. Well, there's a time, like some people get effects immediately, but for others, you just got to wait a few years.
Well, heck, all we're suggesting here is that she's not showing her face in public because of some visible reason.
Yeah.
But there's a vaccine injury anyway, most likely, because she's got cancer and she's healthy.
Yeah.
She's 42 or something.
And Charles at the same time.
At the same time.
Yeah.
And their aunt. What's her name? Sarah.
Yeah.
Sarah Ferguson.
Right.
A bit earlier, last December.
Yeah.
That it's the overall topic at the very least.
Cancer. It's a limited hangout in that respect. And we say you admit the cancer because cancer can be this. People know that everybody. There's so many people getting cancer these days. You know, it's like I know loads of people are getting cancer. It's crazy. So that can be explained away as normal, whereas if it was something more rare and more dramatic for someone her age, you know, like something that was causing some neurological issue that meant that maybe she had a Bell's palsy or some kind of something affecting her movements or her appearance as a result of neurological effects from a vaccine injury.
Plus some,
that's going to be more directly linked to vaccine than cancer. Even though the breakout in cancers or the kind of, as I call them, turbo cancer should be something that should be looked at. In the context of COVID vaccines over the past number of years and how many cancers. But they've got an answer for that, you see. And they rolled it out very quickly, which was that the delay, because they had to protect the population and shut down the National Health Service and health services in different countries, a lot of cancer screenings went unscreened.
Right.
And therefore a lot of people are getting cancer for that reason. So there's something there to mix it in and muddy the waters where you can say, yeah, but... So it's hard to point it out. But something more rare, like I said, for someone her age and with no family history of it, if, you know, something like some neurological issue that was affecting her speech or her physical appearance, you know, her muscles, basically, then that would be, might raise more questions about vaccine injuries, so they go with the cancer.
Yeah. And hope she's going to make it fairly intact, because they keep putting off a date that she'll reappear.
Yeah.
She may not make it. And then they have a serious, we don't know what's going on, but Charles, he may be gone this year. Because he's old as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's a weird thing. How the hell did Charles actually take the shot? Because you imagine that in those circles, you know, don't actually take it. It's just for the plebs. And he's obviously connected with the Schwab. Did Klaus Schwab actually take the vaccine?
Mm-hmm.
There's only rumors, but they're fairly well founded. Some guy in France said it's common knowledge in Paris that no one in the government actually took the shot. You know, they faked it.
Mm-hmm.
But then the British royals have always been expendable to crown interests.
Yeah.
That's why we tend to have sympathy for them more than pile on and say that they're like the center of a cult and reptilians and shit. I mean, there are such people mentally like that in power, but they've no choice. Maybe they didn't want the vaccine, but they had to for crown interests, you know?
Yeah.
One last item kind of goes back to our previous topic about whatever took place in the South Atlantic. Probably, I'm guessing it was seismic in origin, you know. Mm-hmm. Probably an earthquake would cause a rupture and outgassing. April 5th, remember New York was hit with an earthquake.
Mm. It was the then...
biggest quake in 140 years, 1884.
Anything to do with them Lubavitch Jews in their tunnels?
Jesus.
Okay. They're digging off, like in Lord of the Rings and the mines. And, you know,
they dug too deep.
They dug too deep, searching for the gold.
Too greedily.
Too greedily, too deeply.
This is a local paper, yeah. Her biggest quake in 140 years. There's something weird about it. They initially reported it as a 4.8. And then downplayed it and said, no, it was only 3 point something. Mm. So that headline is actually dated because it's based on, you see in the caption there, a 4.8 magnitude. Mm. They downgraded it by a good whole percentage point or whatever it is, a whole magnitude to 3 something.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm suspicious. I think it probably was as strong as initially thought. And someone might have done some fiddling there with the statistics to, you know, make it fit the models because it's not supposed to happen, right? And literally, because in this case, New York City Mayor Adams' statement says, New Yorkers should go about their normal day. Everything is fine. Mm-hmm. They're literally the meme at this point. You know, the dog in the room and everything's on fire and he's drinking his coffee. This is fine. Here's footage of it. This looked like a... If anyone's in New York, tell us, like, what did it feel like to you? Just fine? Or were you worried? Because this is some footage. There's some serious... there's no serious damage, but there was substantial shaking and, like... Scotty, can we see it? Yeah, here we go. That would get people's attention. There's the One World Trade Center. These are guys working on top of a skyscraper.
Dude.
Does that look like it's fine?
That's got to be a 4.8. Holy shit.
Well, they knew what to do. Fair play to the kids. But they knew what to do because it was strong.
Shit. Stop, drop, and roll. That's for fire, isn't it? Wibble wobble.
Wibble wobble. That's the noise it made. Yeah, that's substantial.
That's important of things to come.
I reckon so.
Somewhere. Everywhere.
There was another quake in Taiwan since we last did the show. Far stronger than that, but they're strongest in 25 years. Their buildings are made for this, though. 9 deaths. A few buildings collapsed, but it mostly hit the east side, which is less populated. That's all we got.
All right. Do you know I stayed up all night last night?
That's not good.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out where the sun was. But then it dawned on me. Thanks. No applause, please.
Do we have an applause option?
We need to get one, though. A really bad applause option.
Yeah.
Like one clap. Anyway, yes.
Slow clap.
There you go. Slow clap. So we're going to leave it there, as Neil just said, for this week, folks. We hope you enjoyed the updates. Thanks for commenting, watching, listening, whatever you're doing. Don't forget to like all the smashy like buttons, and we'll be back next week with another one on whatever nonsense has been going on between now and then. So until then, have a good week. Bye.
Bye, all.
Can't stop the signal now.